Welcome back to Four Winds Fellowships. I'm Tim Warner. We are studying the doctrine of God and His Son. And we are looking at John chapter 1. Last time we went through verses 1 through 3, talked about in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. We spent most of our time talking about that. And then we also pointed out that everything originated through Him is language that was borrowed directly out of Genesis chapter 1. Now, I want to focus on a difference in readings in several of the translations. Now, most of our English translations read very similar to the NASB, which I have at the top of your screen there. I want you to notice particularly where the period is here. You see that period at the end of verse 3 and how verse 4 begins a new sentence, "In Him was life." All right, so let's look at this. "All things came into being by Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men." Now, what's interesting about this statement is because these words are attached to verse 3 rather than verse 4, it leaves verse 4 beginning with a prepositional phrase, "In Him was life." And this implies that life was continually in Him. And of course, this gives Trinitarians license, if you will, to claim that He, Logos, the one who through whom God created all things, the Son, was always with God and life was always in Him. However, there is a difference in reading in some translations, and I'm going to talk about why that is in a moment. I have here four translations that read essentially the same, but different than what is in most of your English Bibles. So here we have the LGV. "Everything originated through Him, and without Him nothing originated." Note where the period is. "What has originated in Him was life, and the life was the light of men." So now we have the origin of life being talked about here, but it's not being talked about here. "In Him was life" doesn't say anything about life originating. All right, so you can see the difference in these words. The New Revised Standard Version, "All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being, period." "What has come into being in Him was life, and the life was the light of all people." The New Jerusalem Bible is essentially the same. "Through Him all things came into being, not one thing came into being except through Him," note the period, "what has come into being in Him was life, life that was the light of men." And then finally, the New World Translation, this is the Jehovah's Witness version of the Bible, but it also agrees with these. "All things came into existence through Him, and apart from Him, not even one thing came into existence. What has come into existence by Him," and it, here it says "by means of Him," which is incorrect, "was life, and the life was the light of men." "By means of" is not in the text. It literally says "in Him." "What has come into existence in Him." So that statement, "by means of Him," is incorrect. However, I wanted to include this one also because of the way that the sentence is punctuated. And this is the thing that I want to talk about. All right. What you see here is really one word in Greek. It's actually one word with the definite article, the. Let me go to my next slide and I'll illustrate this. All right. This is the Greek text here of the way it's in Westcott Hort's text, and also the Nestle-Allen text and the United Bible Society's text. All of the Greek editions, critical editions of the Bible, the New Testament, excuse me, that have come out since 1881 that use punctuation, that is the scholars who put together, they critically examine all the various manuscripts and they through critical analysis, they try to weed out the differences that are probably incorrect and give us a text that is most likely reflective of the original text. All right. That's what the critical text is. And all of the Bible texts that are used as a basis for translation ever since 1881, with the exception of the King James Version, which obviously was before that, and the New King James Version, which uses the same base text that the King James Version was based on. All of your other Bible versions, generally speaking, those that are used widely among Christians, and there's quite a lot of them, use this text, which is the Nestle Allen or the UBS, United Bible Society's printed Greek edition of the New Testament. And what these printed editions do, the original manuscripts didn't have punctuation, at least the oldest ones didn't have any punctuation. And so what these Greek editions that are put out by these critical scholars, they add punctuation so that their printed Greek text then is used by Bible translators who read Greek and translate the Bible into English. So the base text that's being used for virtually all Bibles since 1881 would be this text, okay? Nestle Allen or the United Bible Society's text. Now, what I wanted to point out to you is where they put the period here. All right, now this putting the period there started with the Westcott-Hort text in 1881, and then again, all the texts following are placing the period there. All right, now you see here, again, is the word, it's essentially the same verb that we saw before, which is translated originated, all right? But here, it's in the perfect tense, okay? What has originated would be the correct translation, and that's why you see that it's spelled differently. You may have noticed before when we were talking about this verb, when it says all things through him, agenata, which is right here, okay? All things through him, agenata. Agenata is the same verb here, but the difference is here it's in the aorist tense, which is just talking about a past event. Here it's in the perfect tense, which is talking about the result of a past event. That is, an event occurred and the result continues to the present. Okay, that's the difference. All right, so this term is used in the latest Greek manuscripts, since all of them since 1881. It's used to begin a new sentence, which is essentially what has originated in him, Zoe, life, Ain, was. And the life was the light of the men. All right, that's how that reads. It's exactly how we have it here in the Last Generation Version. Everything originated through him, and without him, nothing originated. I want to point out also that if you include this here as the part of this sentence, as opposed to beginning a new sentence, if you do that, it creates a redundancy, which is not very likely. All right, without him, nothing originated. What originated? Why do we have to repeat originated twice? Right, nothing originated, aorist tense, that has originated, essentially, or what has originated. It really adds nothing to the statement. The correct reading is the way it's punctuated in all these modern versions. The problem is that most of your Bible translators don't feel comfortable translating it that way with the period here. They prefer to put the period here. And why is that? That's the question. And the reason is because of their Trinitarian bias. By far, most Bible translators are Trinitarians. If you put the period here, then in him was life is a sentence in and of itself. In him was life, was is a imperfect tense verb, which simply means continuously in the past. So Trinitarians can then say, well, life was in him, that is Logos, who was the one through whom everything was created. Life was in him. And they can stretch that was all the way back into infinity, all right, all the way back into eternity past. And so then they can use, they can interpret the one who is referred to as life or life being in him as being something that's continuous all the way into eternity past. All right, that's the reason why they do it this way, even though the base text that they're using punctuates it differently. They do not follow this. And if you look at the preface to a lot of the modern translations, they will tell you they're following the Nestle Allen or UBS Greek text as their base text. But in a few places, the translators don't follow the punctuation. They change it in order to soften up certain doctrinal issues, okay, that are an issue. If you punctuate it the way that the critical scholars have it punctuated in their Greek editions of the Greek text, if you punctuate it that way, then life is originating in logos. That is, it points to the origination of life. While if you translate it the other way, it doesn't say anything about life originating. All right, that's the key difference. Now, what I wanted to point out to here is A.T. Robertson, he's no longer living, but he was a very highly respected Greek scholar. He was a Baptist. He wrote several books, Greek analysis of the New Testament. This one is called Word Pictures, where he goes pretty much verse by verse, and he comments on the Greek text, especially the grammar and whatnot of the Greek text, pretty much verse by verse through the New Testament. And on this particular verse, this is what he has to say in his Word Pictures. He says, "It is doubtful also whether the relative clause that hath been made, ha get ganen, is a part of this sentence or begins a new one as Westcott and Hort print it. The verb is second perfect active indicative of ginome. Westcott observes that the ancient scholars before Chrysostom," now Chrysostom was a Christian writer from around the late 4th or early 5th century, I believe. Anyway, the ancient scholars before Chrysostom all began a new sentence with ha gegannen. The early uncials, that's the very early manuscripts, had no punctuation. So he wanted to point that out, that you can't tell from the actual ancient manuscripts where the punctuation has to be. However, the biblical scholars that have put together the text have put it there because it makes the most sense there. Okay, but also note that Robertson pointed out that all of the quotations of this verse, or these two verses, in the early church fathers place the punctuation as we have it here in the LGV. All right, that's the critical point. Now, I just put down here three examples of that. I went through the Ante-Nicene Fathers. There's 10 volumes. I have a way of searching them on the computer. And I went through to find every place that verses 3 and 4 are quoted. And I found 18 times. And they are all like this. This is what's being observed by Westcott and Hort, is that all the ancient Christians, when they quoted this verse, and many of them actually start a new sentence, they don't actually quote this. They only quote this as a complete sentence. All right, many of those 18 are that way. All right, so here's what we have. Irenaeus, he writes, "But what has been made in him, says John, is life." Again, he starts a sentence with this. Clement of Alexandria, "The life was manifested, for in the gospel he thus speaks, and what was made in him was life, and the life was the light of men." You can see here that he begins his quote here. All right. Origen by far had the most times that he quoted this verse, and he always quotes it the same way. Here's one of the quotes. John also, who lived after him, said, quote, "That which was in the Logos was life, and the life was the light of men, which true light lighteth every man." All right, so you can see these are just three examples of the 18 that I found prior to the Council of Nicaea, when Trinitarianism really began to be sort of put into creeds, that all the Christians prior to that understood the text this way, that life is originating in the Word, okay, in the Logos. All right, let's move on to our next slide. I wanted to compare now John 1:1-5, from the LGV with 1 John 1, 1 through 3. Now, John's first epistle really picks up the very same theme that he started with in the prologue of his gospel. It starts out the same way, using the same terminology. Now, you may see that I've got things in different colors here. That's because I wanted to point out the parallels between these two statements. All right, so let's read these, let's read those, and let's look at the parallels. In the beginning was Logos, and Logos was with God, and Logos was God. This one was in the beginning with God. Everything originated through him, and without him nothing originated. What has originated in him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not take hold of it. Now, 1 John, his first epistle, written shortly after his gospel, he begins like this. The one who was from the beginning, the one we have heard, the one we have seen with our eyes, the one we have examined and our hands handled regarding Logos of life. And the life was made apparent, and we have seen and we witness and report to you the age-enduring life who was with the Father and was made apparent to us. The one we have seen and have heard, we report also to you, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And yet this fellowship of ours is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus the Anointed. Now, look at the language. In the beginning. In the beginning. The one who was from the beginning. No doubt he's drawing a parallel here. All right. Logos was with God there. And again, in the beginning, with God. Here, who was with the Father. And again, he uses exactly the same rather unusual preposition, pros, here, just as he did up here. With God, he uses pros plus the accusative, I believe it's accusative, yes, of theos here, okay? Same thing. Also, some people question whether this actually means with God. You'll see that some biblical Unitarians do that from time to time. But if you take a look at 1 John chapter 2, verse 1, he talks about we have an advocate with the Father. He uses pros plus the Father. And that's clearly talking about a personal relationship. Christ is seated at the right hand of God. He is the advocate we have with the Father. All right, so the arguments that some biblical Unitarians use to try to claim that that doesn't mean that a person is with the Father in John 1:1, they're incorrect. All right. Anyway, so now what I wanted to point out here is what I have in blue. Okay, what has originated in him was life. That is in him here as Logos, was life. Life originated in Logos. That's what it's saying. And the life, note, it has the definite article here. It doesn't have it here, all right? What originated in him was life. So he's sort of speaking generically. But then he says, and the life, using the definite article, was the light of men. He's referring to Logos by a new title called the life. All right. The Logos is here. The life is here. He's simply using another term to refer to the same being or entity that he uses the word Logos for. All right. The life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness did not take hold of it. Here, notice this. The one who was from the beginning, the one we have heard, the one we have seen with our eyes, the one we've examined, our hands handled regarding Logos of life. Now, he puts the two terms together here. They're separate, right? In the beginning, it was Logos. And then he says, what has originated in him, that is Logos, was life. Then he calls him the life. Here, he combines both terms as a personal title, Logos of life. Why does he use Logos of life? Because life originated in Logos, as he said up here, all right? And notice here again, the life, he uses the definite article again, just as he did up here. And the life was made apparent, and we have seen. Now, obviously, he's not talking about something ambiguous. The apostles saw Christ. They didn't see some abstract concept of life. They saw a person who's called life, right? We have seen and we witness and report to you. And notice here, he also says our hands have handled. Okay, you can't handle something that's abstract. You only handle a you can handle a person, which was Logos of life, right? All right, who was with the Father uses the same preposition there. And was made apparent to us. The one we have seen and have heard, we report also to you so that you may have fellowship with us. Yet this fellowship of ours is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. Now notice he mentions the Father and the Son. We have the Father, we have the Son, Logos mentioned, with God, who is the Father. All right, we've got two persons here. We've got two persons here, the Father and the Son. Now, I know some people who are looking at the LGV here in John, 1 John 1:1-3, probably are noticing to themselves, if you're comparing another translation, that I have a personal pronoun here, the one, as opposed to that which is neuter in most Bible translations. And why is that? Well, what you'll see here in the Greek text is simply the letter omicron. The letter omicron can be, it's a word in and of itself. It's either the relative pronoun in the neuter gender, or it is the definite article in the masculine gender. All right, it's simply the letter omicron. And there's no way to distinguish between those except by looking at the context as to which one makes sense in the context. So most translations will have that which here because that seems to make the most sense to those translators. But that's by no means the only way it can be translated. All right. The one who is also a proper way to translate it as we have it here. The one who was from the beginning. And here, the one, again, it's just the definite article. The one we have heard, the one we have seen, and so forth. if you look at the book of Revelation in chapter 1 especially, but I counted, I think, 5 times in the book of Revelation, you have this clause that's used. It says the one who was, who is, or who, the one who is, who was, and who is to come. It uses exactly the same Greek words that I have here, which is the one who was, which is ha ein. Was is the verb ein. Ha is the one letter. Okay, ha ein. So it can be translated either way, and because of the comparison that we're making between these, and also because of the fact that John writes here that our hands have handled this one, this Logos of life, and the life, he didn't just say the Logos was made apparent, he said the life was made apparent, and we have seen. That is the age enduring life, and that's the life that originated in him, that is Logos here. All right, I hope that makes sense to everybody. All right, there's no doubt that these are parallel, and there's no doubt that this person or this entity being spoken of here as Logos of life and the life is something that can be seen and touched and handled. All right, there's no question about that. So it has to be referring to Christ here. These are just different ways of referring to Christ. All right, now, one final slide. I want to draw to your attention this word life. Now, the word life in Greek is zoe, but this word first appears in the Old Testament, in the Genesis account. And remember, John, in his prologue to his gospel, is referring to the Genesis account. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 2 here and talk about the very first life apart from Adam. Look at this. The Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. Then the rib, which the Lord had taken from the man, he made into a woman. And he brought her to the man, and Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." So we have the origin of the word woman here in Hebrew. refers to her being taken out of a man. All right. Now, I want you to notice here in Genesis 3:20, and this is, I'm going to show you the comparison between the Hebrew and the Septuagint, the Greek reading. Now, the man called his wife's name Eve. Hebrew, this is the Hebrew, Heve in Hebrew. And that is transliterated into our English. You kind of drop the rough H sound. And when it's transliterated means the phonetic sound is transferred into English as opposed to the meaning of the word. But anyway, the man called his wife's name Eve, Heve, because she was the mother of the living. Now, Heve in Hebrew means life. It's the normal word that's translated life everywhere else in the Old Testament. All right, now here's the Septuagint, and this is what I want to call to your attention. Genesis 3:21, in the Septuagint, Adam called the name of his wife life. That's the English translation of the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Old Testament. And the word is Zoe here, because she was the mother of all living. Now, two things I want to point out from this. First, Eve, whose real name in Greek is Zoe, if Zoe was taken out of the man and created as a new person by God, and she is called life, the very first person that came forth out of someone else, in this case Adam, is called life. That's her name. Her name is literally life in Hebrew and in the Septuagint translation. Now, everywhere else in the Septuagint, I think there's only one or two other places where the name Eve appears in the Septuagint, they transliterate it so that it sounds similar to the Hebrew, which is typically what's done with proper names. All right. But in the very first instance where it appears here in Genesis 3:21, it's actually in our English translations, like for example, Breton's translation of the Septuagint into English, they have the word life there. Adam called the name of his wife life, Zoe, because she was the mother of all living. I want to show you that, I want you to consider the parallels here between Christ, the Son of God, and Eve. The Son of God originated in the beginning, according to John 1. John 1:4, what originated in him? And again, this is destroyed in most of our modern versions because they start a new sentence here. They attach this to the previous sentence, making sort of a redundant statement. They don't start, and instead they start the sentence here. In him was life, as though life always existed in Logos or the Word. And that's not what this passage is saying. It's saying life originated in him. What originated in him was life, Zoe. And the life, with the definite article, Zoe, as a name, was the light of men. Zoe here, the life, is a name. Just like Logos of life is a name here. Logos was a name. Life was a name. And then John combined them in 1 John 1:1 and 2, Logos of life. And then he says, and the life, and the Zoe, was made apparent, and we have seen and report to you the age-enduring life, Zoe, who was with the Father and was made apparent to us. Because John, in his prologue to his gospel, is borrowing directly out of the Genesis creation account, I think I proved that pretty conclusively in the previous couple of videos. Because of that, I don't think this is a coincidence at all that John uses this statement that what originated in him was life, which is exactly the same thing that happens with Eve. She's called life. So John is intending and here to point us back to the first time the word life is mentioned in the Septuagint. It's the name of the one who was taken out of the man. You know, in John 8:42, in the Greek text, Jesus, he says, for I out of God issued forth. It's the same kind of thing that we see here with Adam. Now, of course, you know, John goes on to use the language of only begotten of the Father in John 1:14, right? He refers to Logos as the only begotten of the Father, and then he says Logos became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father. That statement is referring back to the beginning when he was Logos and he had the glory with him that he shared with the Father at the very beginning when he was first brought forth out of God as a beginning, as the beginning, and in him, or what originated in him, was life. All right, really important parallel in my opinion. All right, so anyway, that's it for today. Life originated in Logos, or Logos was the origin himself of life. John 1 is telling us in verse 3 and 4 is telling us that Logos had an origin. He was a new life that originated out of God. So what that passage is doing is it does not allow for us to say that Logos, life in Logos, was always existing. It had an origin. And we're going to look at that origin a little bit later when we examine what the Old Testament says about wisdom and the origin of wisdom also. All right. Anyway, God bless. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next time.